Hello and welcome to Investigating the Post Office Scandal. My name is Rebecca Thompson. I'm a freelance journalist and the author of the first published investigation about the Post Office's Horizon IT system when I worked for Computer Weekly in 2009.
And I'm Nick Wallace, author of the book The Great Post Office Scandal, The Fight to Expose a Multi-Million Pound IT Disaster, which put innocent people in jail.
The aim of this podcast is to dig into areas of this scandal which don't get much airtime, find some interesting guests to chew things over with, and generally try and stay on top of the multiple strands to the story.
So during this episode, we'll be talking about the overturning of Postmaster's convictions and the compensation process. On the 9th of June 2022, Gillian Harrison and Richard Ormerod became the 74th and 75th postmasters to have their convictions quashed, and we were both at Southwark Crown Court to speak to them.
It was kind of really nice to be there in a weird way. Obviously, it was a positive thing that was happening for these two people. We met outside and noticed Abby from Hudgels and Neil from Hudgels and introduced ourselves. And introduced ourselves to Gillian and Richard as well. And Gillian had her family there with her, which was really nice.
Yeah, it's always quite an awkward process because I normally go straight to the snappers, who've usually been there half an hour or an hour before most of the journalists turn up, and see if they've identified who the people who we want to speak to actually are. Because, of course, you know, you're not working off any photographs often, and you don't know. Which person you want to speak to. But I think once I'd spotted Abby, it made it much easier to go up and introduce ourselves. But it's still quite awkward then, isn't it? Because
yeah,
you don't know where people are in terms of their headspace, whether they're
exactly, you don't
nervous,
know if they want
hostile.
You hanging around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there's element where you want to be respectful, and you certainly want to introduce yourself and be seen in a positive light in the hope that they will give you an interview afterwards. But yeah, and then we have to go through the sort of nightmare of getting through Southwark Crown Court security, which I think is the fiercest security that I've ever been through, including airports and yeah, any other court in this country.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were allowed to take drinks in, but you had to take a sip of the drink to prove it, I don't know, it wasn't poison.
or acid or something weird yeah, like that. Yeah. And I had to surrender my microphone and my recording device, which I always find a little bit ludicrous because you don't have to surrender your phone because yeah, taking phones off people is silly, yeah, but every phone is a recording device.
Yeah.
So why you have to surrender specific items of kit?
There's probably logic behind it, but I don't, yeah, I don't
quite know.
There's
probably old-fashioned logic behind yeah, it. It's probably the idea that you can't take recording equipment, but this was before smartphones and they haven't updated the rules in 17 years. And so you can take your smartphone in, which is perfectly capable of recording anything that you want, should you choose to break the law in that way. but you're forced, even though I was a card-carrying accredited journalist, forced to surrender all my broadcast recording, professional recording equipment, because what might I do with it that would be different from a phone? Anyway, that just takes time and is frustrating. Yeah. But we got to court, and then we had that moment with Simon Baker QC, the post office barrister,
who's
charming, very very helpful gentleman, but and also very kindly offered to give us his speaking note or a copy of his speaking note so that we knew what he was going to say in court. And that, you know, that's always an interesting conversation because I was able to introduce him to you, and because I don't think you'd met him before.
No, I hadn't. Yeah, he seemed, he did, oh, that's all they can say about him, really. He seemed very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, which it was, yeah, it was interesting to be able to meet him.
What
yeah,
did you make of, I mean, it was almost a perfunctory hearing, wasn't it? Very brief,
yeah,
brief experience. What did you make of what you experienced?
I mean, it did feel very perfunctory, but obviously for Gillian and for Richard, it was, you know, what the last 20 years almost had been, or however many years had been leading up to. So it was perfunctory for half the room, and then for the other half it was an extremely important day, which kind of creates quite a interesting atmosphere. Yeah, it was very fast, very quick.
And Brian, Gillian's husband, he's a fascinating character because he was sort of laughing and joking before we went into court, and I kind of got the sense that it was out of nerves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he was the one who went first when the convictions were quashed. He burst into tears, and he was obviously sitting close to us, but his wife was sitting in the main well of the court. She burst into tears as well, and it was all, I think the judge, you know, took that on board and said a few words. But I thought it might be interesting just to read out what the sentences were that that both Gillian and Richard got, and then the way that the post office characterised it, its response. So this is from Simon Baker's speaking notes. This is what he actually said in court. On the 20th of April 2004 at South Durham Magistrates Court, Richard Ormerod pleaded guilty to three charges of fraud by false accounting to the tune of £31,000. He was sentenced to a 12-month conditional discharge and ordered to pay £250 costs. On the 22nd of July 2005 at Newcastle Underlying Magistrates Court, Gillian Harrison pleaded guilty to four charges of fraud by false accounting, amounting to just £1,474. Wow. And on 12th of August 2005, she was sentenced to a 12-month community punishment order and ordered to pay £320 cost and £1,474 by compensation. Mr. Baker said, in its judgment in Hamilton and others, handed down on the 23rd of April 2021, the Court of Appeal Criminal Division distinguished between Horizon cases, which due to the Post Office's failures of investigation and disclosure, were an abusive process under both categories of abuse. And the court defined a Horizon case as one in which the reliability of Horizon was essential to the prosecution of the appellant. And then he went into Richard and Gillian's specific case. Mr. Ormerod's branch was audited in March 2003. At the time of the audit, Mr. Ormerod stated that he believed that the cash shortfall was due to a system error with Horizon. The reliability of Horizon is therefore essential to his case. And with Gillian Harrison, as a result of an investigation into discrepancies with pension and allowance documentation, Mrs. Harrison was interviewed in January 2005. During that interview, she explained that she'd been experiencing losses at the branch for a number of years. There was no independent evidence of actual shortfalls in the accounts. The reliability of Horizon was therefore essential to her criminal case. And therefore, the respondent, which is the Post Office in that appeal, intends to offer no evidence in relation to each of the appellants, which opened the door for the judge to quash the convictions, which she did.
So once the judge was finished, we get up and we move relatively quickly, partly because we want to be outside before Gillian and Richard got outside so that we can take some photos of them as they come out. But also partly because it felt like you wanted to give them a bit of space to kind of have those first few moments of processing what's just happened. And
there were hugs and tears, weren't there? I noticed, yeah. Carl Flinders wasn't, yeah, he dived in there to get his quote. That's the difference between print and broadcast journalists. We can't do any recording inside court. Print journalists can just dive in and get a quote. But yeah, we filed out, didn't we?
We did, yeah. And we waited for them to come out and kind of waited for a moment to approach, see if they wanted to speak to us.
Yeah, so Richard came out with his thumb up, big smile, and you sort of span out to go and see him. I spoke to Gillian, who, as I said, was there with her very emotional husband, Brian, her daughter, Anna, and son-in-law, Richard. This is what she had to say about her experience.
I can die a happy lady. Well, I'm not a criminal anymore.
Could you try and sum up what it's been like having this hanging over you for the last 17 years?
Nightmare. I don't know. I can't put words to it. It's just an emotion.
What would you like to see happen to the people behind this, the people who took you to court?
I think the Post Office is diseased, and I think the Post Office needs to be eradicated.
Why do you say that?
Because not fit for purpose. You don't need to go into a post office anymore to buy a stamp. You can buy it from a supermarket. Let the supermarkets do it.
You said you loved your job.
I did. You know, 21 years. Yes, I loved every minute of it.
I had no idea it was such a poxy sum that you were taken to court over. What was going on there?
there were errors which Brian and I put the money in. Week, not every week, but week, and then another week, and then another week, and it went on and on and on. And we ran out of money. We couldn't put any more money in.
I know this is essentially a day for celebration to have your conviction quashed and your name cleared, but the years that you've lived under this cloud, just give people a sense of what it actually means to have to live with a criminal conviction and what it's done to your future.
We are very lucky we live where we live. We didn't lose our home, which I was told I would.
You'd tell by the post office you would, wouldn't you? By the post office's own internal investigation team. They're very, very
abrupt.
Okay.
And we live in a very rural area that no one knows us, and we are able to walk out into the village and nobody knows us other than our immediate neighbours who have always supported us. Other than that, we've told no one. No one has been told. Very few people know about it. And I've only recently, since I had this CCRC okay, that we've started to tell people. We told our best friends of 50 years last year. They didn't know.
What are your plans going forward? What would you like to see happen now?
I haven't got plans. I haven't. I don't have any plans.
That's really quite powerful, isn't it, hearing what she has to say there?
Yeah, it is. It's really, it's just horrible, isn't it?
To ruin someone's life over a 1,400 quid discrepancy. I mean, just to give people some context, if they've never come across this before, it looked as if what Gillian was doing was trying to essentially cover up a hole in their accounts which they couldn't understand and which they'd funneled money into by, as Simon Baker said, reintroducing pension and allowance dockets to put the resulting surplus back into the post office in order to cover the unexplained shortfalls. But these unexplained shortfalls were the reason she ended up doing that after they'd exhausted their savings. And we hear stories like this time and time again in this scandal. People just reduced to having nothing, but in order to keep their business going and in the face of complete lack of sympathy or assistance from the post office, they end up doing things which are on just the face of it wrong, but it allows the post office to catch them and then absolutely destroy them in the criminal courts. But the thing that got me about Gillian's interview though was this not having told their best friends of 50 years until last year. She made a reference there to the CCRC, which is the Criminal Cases Review Commission, and both Richard Ormerod and Gillian Harrison came through the Criminal Cases Review Commission, which is the body that essentially kicked this off through the appeal process, certainly, because it was their referral to the Court of Appeal which led to where we are today with all these convictions quashed. And although people, postmasters, can now go directly to the Court of Appeal if they think that their conviction is unsafe, it was the CCRC that was one of the driving forces in making this happen, which, if you want to trace that back to the stage before it, was triggered by the second judgment in the Bates v Post Office civil trial. That 50 years thing, the idea just that you could live with this shame that you have to keep hidden even from your closest friends.
Yeah.
In terms of what that does to you, you know, because you're living with a secret, you're living with a sort of guilty secret which you should never have had in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, even if people are kind of, you know, they don't lose their homes, maybe they don't kind of suffer the wrath of their community, because obviously some people, they are surrounded by people who know about it and they get treated horribly as a result. Even if they are not victims of that kind of behaviour, they are still living with this around their neck, and the sort of practicalities as well of having criminal conviction. I mean, it's sort of emotional, psychological.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's what we should probably do at a later episode, speak to someone who has had a criminal conviction and just have them explain in detail what that does, because so many sub-postmasters were advised by their own legal counsel to plead guilty to avoid going to jail. And in that position of absolute desperation and fear of going to prison, despite knowing they were innocent, they pleaded guilty. And that caught them in a trap which ruined them for the rest of their lives. Not just because of what a criminal conviction can do to you, but also because you can never be innocent. How can you be innocent if you've pleaded guilty to a crime? That's what guilty people do. Innocent people, you know, when I first picked up this story, I thought, well, why would an innocent person ever plead guilty to a crime they didn't commit? That doesn't make any sense at all. And it's taken me a long time to understand how people can be in that place of desperation where they're so terrified of what going to prison might mean that they take the advice from their own solicitors, who they trust, that a guilty plea is their best option. I mean, but that's hard to explain to the general public. It's hard to explain to an editor when you're trying to get
you're trying to pitch this.
Going back to your initial investigation in 2009, did you have those? I mean, you must. Any good editor would be asking those questions. But how supportive was Tony when you explained to him that there were people who had criminal? Because Lee Castleton wasn't, and Alan Bates were your first contacts. Neither of whom had criminal convictions.
Yeah,
but you soon spoke to people who did have criminal convictions.
Yes.
Did you have discussions about whether or not you should include people with criminal convictions or people who pleaded guilty?
It was tricky, and I guess we kind of just chose to believe the postmasters despite the fact that that some of the evidence was kind of not in their favour. I think we kind of made sure that we asked them for everything they could possibly give us in terms of their attempts to solve the issue, their attempts to kind of flag the issue as early as possible. So if they had emails and stuff like that where they said, I didn't do any of this, we would kind of use that to bolster our own kind of faith or our own sort of set of proof to help us feel comfortable about it. But I don't remember any of my editors ever wavering. So there was Bill and Brian who were also working
on
it.
Bill and Brian.
Sorry, Bill was the news editor at the time, Bill Goodwin and Brian McKenna was the editor at the time at Computer Weekly. And both of them did loads of work on the story. And yeah, I don't ever really remember anyone wavering. I think everyone was fairly convinced by it, especially once you explain that kind of horrible situation that people were in. You kind of understand it. And it goes back to just believing these people. They were just inherently believable. And so we went with, I guess, our instincts on it a lot of the time.
Interesting. Whilst I was speaking to Gillian, you were speaking to Richard Ormerod. What did he say to you?
He was a man of relatively few words. He didn't really want to be particularly quoted or doing an on-record interview, but he just said that he felt wonderful about what had happened. And that he was extremely grateful to his team of solicitors who had worked very hard on it and are obviously doing a brilliant job for a lot of these postmasters. And that was pretty much it. I think he was kind of obviously quietly relieved and keen to get back to get out of London.
Fair enough. Well, you mentioned his solicitors there. Hudgell solicitors represented both Richard and Gillian on the 9th of June, as they have the vast majority of appellants going through this process. But right now, no one who has had their conviction quashed, despite the fact that the first convictions were quashed on the 11th of December 2020, no one who's had their conviction quashed has received full and final compensation from the post office. So this is what Hudgell's executive chairman, Neil Hudgell, had to say when I asked him about compensation.
Yeah, I mean, just obviously, firstly, it's I think it's easy to become a bit desensitised to the process because we've been here so many times. But you know, yet again, each case is horrific on its own facts. It's a milestone day for both today. You know, and I think it's as you've seen from the emotion that Gillian's shown there, it's a bittersweet moment. It's time for reflection. But then there will come a time, once the dust settles, that they'll want to see some proper compensation, and that's the next stage in the journey for us. Where we're at generally is hopefully progressing along.
I did hear the phrase "poles apart" in between what the post office are estimating realistic compensation is and what representatives of the sub postmasters are saying.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that you know, this well-worn phrase about use of public money keeps being thrown at us, I suppose it's a byproduct of litigation that two sides have differing views. You know, we feel that these people need to be properly compensated. At the moment, we are at significant difference in respect of certain parts of the claims, but we are going through a process of negotiation, which means it's difficult for us to expand on that. We're confident that the direction of travel of that negotiation and that dialogue is positive. Whether it will reach a satisfactory conclusion remains to be seen. The goal remains for those that were exonerated to be able to put this to bed by the end of this year, so that they can have some closure. You know, they can enjoy generally the later stages of their lives with something to give them some comfort, that can never sort of properly compensate them for everything that they've lost.
If you remain at Poles apart from what the post office think is reasonable, what is the next step?
Well, there's a variety of mechanisms, whether that's through formal court proceedings or some form of alternative to court, be that mediation, arbitration, and we're exploring all those. So we really want to find a fix that does not involve another round of high court litigation that goes on for years and years and years. And as I say, the direction of travel with the dialogue that's going on at the minute is cautiously positive, is the best way to describe it.
You, obviously, more than anyone, would appreciate how frustrated many sub-postmasters are getting, and whilst they speak very highly of what you and your colleagues are doing for them, you must understand their frustration.
Oh, completely, and you know, I agree with the frustration. You know, there's a myriad of decision-making that goes on within post office, because obviously it's not just them that's involved, there's biz involved, there's the treasury involved, so there's all that red tape associated with that, which makes decision making from their perspective more difficult. Doesn't justify or excuse the delays, but does give an explanation for it, and yeah, we accept and share the frustrations. But as you know, it's our job to manage those frustrations. And as I say to the clients, there's quite a big jigsaw to piece together that involves 20 years of losses that, in very many instances, don't have any documentation sits behind them. So it takes some piecing together. And what we don't want to do, and there's a tension here between reaching the finish line and settling the case, but putting it in its best state and condition. So we want to get them the best compensation that we can, and unfortunately that takes some time. So there's that, you know, we're batting against people's very understandable anger still, you know, anger, frustration, and all those things. So it's a delicate mix.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Always.
So that was Neil Hudgell, Executive Chairman of Hudgell Solicitors, who, as I say, has taken the vast majority of sub-postmasters through the appeal courts. What do you make of that, Rebecca?
Well, was he saying that the post office is arguing the amounts down on the basis that it's public money?
That's what he seems to be saying, yeah. And he's obviously a man in a very difficult position here, isn't he? Because he does not want to upset the post office or the government or the people he's negotiating with unnecessarily.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we are now moving into the years waiting for compensation. Mm. And you wonder how much goodwill there is left.
I would say negative amounts of goodwill. I mean, maybe I'm just approaching it from quite a basic perspective, but I just don't understand why the post office or why the government would be arguing the amounts down.
That's that argument about public money, isn't it?
But they weren't worried about that when they were.
Yeah, then they were.
They were the nail in the high court. Yeah, I feel like that kind of slight warped obsession with public money is still tainting this process.
It's a mantra that comes out, I'm told, from the Treasury. You know, when anything like spending public money is being discussed, that it becomes. I compare it to, and this might be unfairly, to when I went to GCHQ and filmed in there, interviewed people who fetishized secrecy to the extent that secrecy became more important than actually doing a good job. You know, secrecy was the most important thing, so therefore they didn't have to justify what they were doing because secrecy was the servant of public good in their organization. And it can become a little bit blinding and all-consuming. And I wonder whether this mantra about giving the public value for money is either a ploy to just negotiate people down, or whether it actually blinds people to the wrongs that have been committed and the deserving cases who need their situations resolved as quickly as possible. But no, it's very interesting.
Combination of the two.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, it's very useful mantra to have in your back pocket. Oh, we've got to give the public value for money, so therefore we're going to spend forever trying to negotiate you down to an unrealistic figure.
At great legal expense still. There'll be still.
Well, what I've heard is that a lot of sub-postmasters are looking for 6 or 7 figures compensation, and those who had their convictions quashed, and the post office are closer to 5 figures, and that's a huge difference.
5 figures.
Yeah, I mean, if the most the post office are looking to hand over is £99,000 to anyone, that to me doesn't really suggest they're taking seriously what people have been through.
It's the post office's own strategies that have led to this kind of situation of, I guess, effective bankruptcy. For me, that says more about their continued attitude than the statements that they put out saying that they're sorry. Okay, well, that's a good place to wrap this episode up. Thank you again to Sir Gillian for speaking to us about her experience. I mean, it was obviously a huge day for her. I'm really grateful that she shared some thoughts. It's not an easy thing to do when you're in that kind of emotional place. So thank you very much, Gillian. We spoke briefly to Abby from Hudgels about what the numbers might eventually look like. And of course, Hudgels don't know. It's impossible for anyone to know where this might end up. But with over 700 convictions, it could be that we're only a tenth of the way there in terms of the number of people that might eventually have them quashed.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thanks very much to everyone for listening. We're just still feeling our way with this. So forgive us if it's either too scripted or too unscripted or too...
Rubbish.
Too rubbish to listen to the end to, but we'll get there eventually. If you do want to follow us, please do follow us using your follow button on your podcast platform. If you want to send us some feedback, go to postofficescandal.uk and use the contact form, and we will respond to what you have to say, whether it's ideas for people to speak to, or whether you want to come on yourself, or whether you have ideas for subject areas that you would like us to cover.
Yes, thank you so much for listening, and if you find it informative, find it useful, please tell your friends. This podcast is researched, produced, edited, presented, paid for and owned by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace. We are kindly supported by Whistledown Productions, who are letting us use their studio, expertise and tea-making facilities for free.